The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
Welcome to Ron Paul, the weekly podcast. I'm Charles Goyette. Well, you remember the sequestration deal that was passed in the summer of 2011 during that debt ceiling debate. It was represented as a real act of fiscal responsibility, but in reality, it was just another replay of the Washington fraud. It really only promised to reduce the rate of debt increase. But more spending is never enough spending for the governing classes, and to be sure, the only thing that was lasting in that deal was an increase in the national debt ceiling. Now Congress has passed a $1 trillion-plus appropriation bill funding the government for the rest of this fiscal year, and we'll talk about it with Ron Paul right after this.
How would you like to do something that's good for you and good for America? Well, you can, just by shopping like you normally do. You see, just about everybody uses Amazon these days, because it's so easy. But from now on, when you're going to shop on Amazon, go to the PodcastOne.com Ron Paul page and click on the Amazon link there. When you do, a portion of whatever you buy gets kicked back to the Ron Paul show to help keep the podcast coming and keep us from having to run tons and tons of ads. So we can be selective and focus on getting you Ron's message. So do it. Go to PodcastOne.com, click on the Ron Paul page, and click on Amazon. The next time you're going to buy something, use that link. You'll be helping yourself because you're buying something you want, and helping America because you're helping keep Ron Paul's messages coming. And there's no extra costs involved. You pay the same price, it's the same Amazon. If you want to help out even more, tell your friends to do the same thing. Go to PodcastOne.com, click on Ron Paul, then click on the Amazon link. You'll be glad you did.
Dr. Paul, another debt ceiling debate is only weeks away, and they've thrown in the towel on fiscal conservatism with the Ryan Murray budget deal. The Republicans even helped snuff the life out of the sequestration agreement.
Yes, it sure, certainly doesn't look like the Republicans are going to save us from overspending. And you mentioned the fact that the sequestration and this agreement that they had recently actually allow them to raise the national debt without a vote unless the Congress votes and rescinds it, and then the president can veto that bill. So the Congress has lost all control, except for the fact that many of them want to spend, so I guess they're still in control of spending more money. I guess really it's the people who have lost control because their members of Congress have given up too much. But it is all smoke and mirrors when the sequestration went through and the hysteria about slashing national security and all these funds. But it was only a very, very small amount of cutting of proposed increases. Without sequestration, in the next 10 years, the spending was supposed to go up 20%. And sequestration, this vicious attack on big government spending, was going to allow the military budget to go up only 18%. And it was figured out that the cut in military proportionally was much greater than the welfare spending at home, but neither side is going to have any cuts. So this is, you know, what we're facing. It's been a long time since the Congress went through and systematically went over their 13 appropriation bills and passed them. It's always been thrown into a big basket at the end. I guess this must be the biggest one. It's over $1 trillion. The number of pages, 1,582 pages. You know darn well there's no one single person capable of reading it. And even when you go to the staffers, there's no one staffer that reads it. Every group of special interests, you know, are the legislators behind the scenes. So if you're representing the military-industrial complex, it might be 400 pages, and somebody writes that. But no one member has any idea what is in there. And, you know, what if we would have had an up or down vote on the Congress to decide whether or not to have the American taxpayers invest $10,000 to research Wonder Woman and study this significance of this comic book hero. So that's the kind of money that gets spent. But, you know, in some ways, that's really pretty minor compared to spending $10 billion, you know, on some military appropriation that we don't need. Matter of fact, the the war budget for the first time with sequestrations of all things, it went up since, 2010. So it's the first time it's been literally raised and put in the budget. It's up to $85 billion. And you know, what's interesting about that is they don't say that's the war budget. Sort of 1984 newspeak. This is the overseas continuing operations budget. So that means it's going to continue and these operations are necessary. And it's sort of, a follow up on how we went to war in Korea. Remember, it wasn't going to be a war. And Truman took us to war under UN, and they called it a police action. Well, now we have overseas continuing operations, and that's what it's called when you have an empire. So these funds are going up. There's no fiscal conservative party. Those fiscal conservatives who say, well, this is the best we can do, and then they'll throw it out and they say, well, you know, we have to avoid the shutdown. But I'm just wondering, if you went out on the street today and talked to 100 people or a couple hundred people and took a poll and say, what did you think of the shutdown? You know, most of them would say, what are you talking about? And, the government shut down. Did you suffer from this? And unless you were in Washington, D.C., where you might talk to a federal worker, they don't know about that. Nobody suffered the consequences. And if the federal workers were honest about this great fear about a shutdown, they did quite well. Nobody lost any income. Their salaries continued. And then some of them went on unemployment benefits. So, in the sense of immediate pain from the shutdown, there was nothing. But, of course, there was great fanfare with it and try to frighten the people, and it became just a political football. At the same time, the spending marches on. The conservatives vote for a budget that does nothing to rein in Obamacare. They do nothing. As a matter of fact, they endorse, Common Cause, and that funding keeps going up. So the tragic answer to this and the conclusion of this budget is government marches on. The spending continues. Deficits will be with us. There's no conservative party. They work together. They both endorse the military-industrial complex. They both endorse the welfare system. And the only thing that holds it together is the fact that still around the world, people see us because of our presence around the world, our military power, our wealth that we're still consuming. We're not building wealth. The people are still willing to honor and trust the dollar. My argument has been for years that is the big threat, because eventually this type of government operation where there's no concern for deficits and no concern for these big government programs, no concern for the principle that we run an empire, will eventually come down very hard on us. And another argument I've made is that, a nation that lives beyond its, beyond its means will live beneath its means. And that is what we're doing every single day. You hear another statistic showing that there's more and more wealth in the world, but it's all going into the hands of the very few, which just gives the redistributionists the argument, well, we have to do something. We have to take this money from this group and give it to the people who aren't working and that sort of thing, failing to realize that this maldistribution of wealth is a consequence of big government, the military-industrial complex and the peace and the people who are receiving these funds first, the bankers and government. They all benefit from this. And this was predictable by Austrian economics that the middle class would get wiped out. So it's not a fault of a free market economy. You hear this constantly, even on the business stations who are supposed to know a little bit about the market. They'll say, well, it's out of hand and there's too much aggressiveness. People are making too much money. Government has to step in. And maybe it's time we have to raise the minimum wage laws in order to equalize this system, failing to think fundamentally about free markets, property rights, contracts, sound money, a republic that doesn't go around policing the world. And certainly nobody can get any positive encouragement from this budget. This is an endorsement of big government that has embarked on unlimited spending. And no matter what they say and what they tell us, there's no serious effort to rein in government and in a short period of time, and nobody knows exactly when. It's not too far in the distance. It will be recognized by the markets. The politicians aren't going to say, okay, they may give you lip service, but the politicians in Washington aren't going to say all of a sudden, yeah, I guess those fiscal conservatives, those libertarians, they must be right. So we need to systematically cut back. No, if they're put pressure on, they'll come up with another sequestration, which is nothing based on lies and deceit, and just postpone the inevitable. But right now, the budget was passed with Congress having not a whole, the average congressman having very little to say about it and not having individual votes. And the people, some people might just say, well, at least they're not fighting up there and they got the budget passed and maybe things will be okay. But my assumption is, and my prediction is, that that is not the case.
Dr. Paul, I was asked this very question on a radio interview myself this morning, and I'm interested in how you might answer it. What is the media's role as an enabler of the representation of these developments as fiscally responsible, portraying, for example, the sequestration as some sort of act of fiscal conservatism, or the Ryan Murray bill as, you know, tough economic measures and so on? What is their role, and what will change the way they report this?
Well, they have a major role, and they perpetuate the myths. On having been on the receiving end of a lot of grief from the media over the years, being in politics, a lot of that, of course, is motivated for pure politics. Most of them consider themselves liberal Democrats and think there's a big difference between that and a conservative Republican. Some know exactly, the truth, and that is that they're one and the same, and they want to perpetuate the myth. So some very high in the media will perpetuate the myth, say when we have two candidates, which have been going on for maybe 100 years, where the two major candidates really endorse the same program, you know, the empire, the military, welfare, and the central bank, and, you know, all these things. So they know it and they perpetuate it. But others will come up and they like a fight too. Even though there's philosophically not that great a fight, they like to stir things up and say, well, there's no compromise in Washington, never get along together, and they just stir the pot and they love it. But that's part of what they think their job is. But the other problem you have is that there are some very good people in the media. They're very sincere, and they do make an effort to try to be fair and decent. And it was always nice to meet those kind of people in the media. But back to the subject of education, all of them have been educated in our routine colleges and high schools and all. They have taught Keynesian economics. So they actually don't have the vaguest notion about how free markets work and how detrimental the central bank is. And it's not so much that they're part of the conspiracy as they're part of, the endorsement of bad ideas. So in those many ways, in a power struggle, the media plays a role in the political shenanigans that go on. And out of ignorance, they have this huge influence, because I often dreamed about having, run into a news commentator or somebody doing an interview that actually knew Austrian economics. And of course they don't. So when you throw out these terms, they're just sort of bewildered. I remember in the presidential race, I would throw out the term Austrian free market economics. And later on, people would come up and make fun. What are you, an Austrian? They had no idea. But more people know now what Austrian economics is all about. But yes, I think the media has a major role to play. I guess the most important thing we can do is contribute to economic understanding, and maybe that would help correct the problems.
Well, I remember seeing Bill O'Reilly on Fox within the last couple of years asking somebody, who is this guy Keynes, he said.
Oh,
Keynes.
Yeah.
Because now here he is commenting on economic matters, on budgets, influencing the nation night after night on national TV, and he has no idea who the most influential economist of the governing classes in the last couple of generations is. This is all new to him.
Yeah, he's the one that was interviewing me once, and I wanted to, you know, pull up a historic fact of how that historic fact was, you know, influencing our, you know, our foreign policy. He says, I don't want to hear anything about history, you know. So I guess he doesn't want to hear anything about economics and or history. But you know what? He's the most successful guy on TV right now, I believe, or at least close to it.
Yep, he's the big one. Well, Dr. Paul, thank you for your time, for another great conversation and podcast, for your commentary and insight into the budget mess. There's really no resolve for this thing. I'm looking at this as a time bomb ready to blow with rising interest rates. Thanks for your insight and bringing us up to speed. Ron Paul, The Weekly Podcast. I'm Charles Goyette.
This concludes another PodcastOne.com program.